So this sanctuary was built in 1925.
That's right.
Okay, and still in the original position.
That's right. Okay. The only thing that is different is that, so this raised platform, which is where we conduct the service, mm-hmm. this used to be underneath the Star of David.
Okay.
I'm not sure why it was moved. I don't know if it was an issue of flooding or if it was just that people felt, you know, as the congregation grew that it was better, but that's the only difference. So these are, you know, everything in here is original from 1925.
Okay. To somebody who is not really of understanding of this symbol, mm-hmm. the Star of David, can you just give a casual listener the simple explanation and importance of the Star of David?
So the Star of David, universally to both Jews and non-Jews alike, represents and is associated with Jews and Judaism in the same way that the cross is universally associated associated with and represents Christians. What you're seeing here occurs during the service.
Okay.
So this is what's laid out here is reflects the rituals that open the Sabbath at home.
Okay.
So it starts
and
with
it consists
lighting
of the candle.
That's right. It starts with lighting a pair of candles.
Okay.
The Sabbath candles. Then after before the meal, so after, let's say you've been to the Sabbath evening service, it starts with ritually washing your hands, and there's a blessing said after you wash your hands.
Okay.
Then there's a blessing over the wine.
And is it a special wine?
It doesn't have to be.
Okay.
Many people use a wine that there's sort of a traditional wine that happens to be very sweet and. You know, people use it, I think, more out of tradition, but no, it can be any kind of wine. It can be grape juice. It has to be kosher. Sabbath, so the Sabbath begins at sundown on Friday night, and it ends...
Significant meaning. So I would just want an explanation as to what I'm looking at and what they are.
So we can start here with, this is called the shofar.
Okay.
It's a ram's horn. These are actual ram's horns. You're welcome to pick one up if you want. You can see we have different sizes, right? These guys are small. These are big. The bigger ones often make a deeper sound. So in biblical times, this was used for a variety of purposes. It was used to announce the beginning of the Sabbath. It was used to summon people to assembly. It was used to summon people to prayer. It was also used in prayer. Now, we only blow the shofar on the Jewish New Year, which is called Rosh Hashanah, and over the course of the service, so the service is two days, so on each of those 2 days, this is blown to make 100 total beats or measures. So there's a long, a single sound,
mm-hmm.
a three sounds, a nine sound.
Okay.
And those all combine to make 100. And then on Yom Kippur, we don't blow the shofar at all
mm-hmm.
because it's a day of atonement, it's a day of repentance. We only blow it at the very end of the service. It's a weekly portion. We read it from up there on the burgundy covered table. That sort of little raised area is called, it's called a bima, which literally just means a raised platform. So when our rabbi is here, he reads from it. We have other people who can read from it as well. The Torah has a covering from it. There's a special ritual when it gets put away at the end of the service. There's a ritual in terms of it being wrapped up, and it has to be tied properly, and it gets the cover on it, and it gets decorated with some things.
Can you give us the age of this particular Torah, if you have, an edition, or when was it published?
I don't know when this, I see that this one on November 22nd, 2010
okay.
had some additions made to it.
Okay.
All of our Torahs are much older.
Some of them are older.
Oh yes, all of these are much, much, 2010 was when this was updated. What I mean by updated, not that the text was changed, but if any of the letters fade, they need to be inked again by a special scribe. So that's what this is about. But these scrolls are from, you know, the 19, 1950s, maybe earlier. We have our last scroll was dedicated in honor of people who died in the Holocaust, but it probably the last one that we acquired maybe is from the 1950s, I would think.
And what are we looking at here?
Yep. So this is a crown that goes on the Torah. So if you imagine this wound up, so totally closed and with its cover on and tied, then you can put this crown. I'll show you after you take a picture. So you see inside here that there's two holes.
Okay.
So these are for the scroll. So this goes on top of the scroll to decorate it. We only put that on the high holidays. So on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the Jewish New Year and the Day of Atonement, the Torahs get decked out. Those are the holiest days of the year. The Torahs get decked out with extra ornaments. So we have this crown and we have some smaller crowns for the other ones.
Okay. Now, any other thing that you can explain on the table? That is
so the different books that are laid out there are we have some daily prayer books. We have a special prayer book that we use just on the high holidays. There's additional prayers for that. And then the one at the back is, so all of these books are bilingual. They're Hebrew English. Many people in the congregation are reading the English while the service is happening. Some people are following the Hebrew. You know, there's a mix of levels of education and experience and that sort of thing. So you kind of have a bit of a variety.
It's got to be pretty heavy.
Yes. So the Torah scrolls vary in weight. I carry one of them around the synagogue. I've carried a few of them before. I think that the smallest one is probably about 30, 35 pounds. The bigger ones are more like 40 to 50. So it's kind of like carrying a bit of an unwieldy toddler, I like to think. And in addition to that, I mean, obviously you wouldn't want to drop a toddler either. If the Torah is dropped, then people are supposed to fast for 40 days to atone for the sin of dropping it. So there's a lot at stake in...